How would you like it if you were told your horses couldn't drink water out of your own creek? Today we talk with someone who fought back and still has her farm today. But what about those who choose not to fight? You'll get some thoughts and new ideas on property rights. Listen to what you need to know in case this happens to you on this edition of Homefront.
I'm an American!
Welcome to Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host, and I'm here to help. From parenting to public policies to political advice, join me in taking America back one family at a time. As a speaker, writer, former legislator, mother of seven, and wife of one for over 30 years, I bring you my experience.
Don't lose your freedom.
And now it's time for Homefront. Okay, welcome to Homefront. I am so glad you could join us today, and we bring a very special guest. We have Renee Holliday. She comes to us from Stevens County in Washington State. She's the author of a book called The Perils of Sustainable Development. She's also a full-time researcher for StopAnimalID.org and the president of the Local Citizens Alliance for Property Rights Group in Stevens County. So thank you for joining us, Renee.
Thank you for having me.
You sound like you've been busy.
Oh, yeah.
And of all these, I rattled off a long list of what you're currently doing. Let's start with the perils of sustainable development. When did you decide it was time to author a book?
Well, I had been researching, you know, a variety of subjects that all led to the United Nations and all of the programs that the United Nations is responsible for. And so I went through about 6 years of research into that topic, and finally, after having run for county commissioner, the local paper had been wanting me to write articles about that information about sustainable development and the United Nations Agenda 21, and so I was just writing articles for them for about a year and a half, and finally I went, you know, there's been a lot of people that keep asking me kind of repetitive questions, you know, and I thought, geez, I probably should just put it all in a book.
Good going. Well, there are a lot of people who listen to this from all over the country, but we are hosted by Missouri Grassroots Radio Network, so there are a lot of people in the heartland. And just to give us all a little geography lesson, I looked up Stevens County. And first of all, a lot of people from Missouri sometimes confuse Oregon and Washington because they're all kind of up there northwest.
Right.
But it looks like you're just a little bit north of Seattle and you border Canada. What's it like up there today?
Well, actually, we're on the other side of the state. We're in eastern Washington, real close up there by the Canadian border, and well, it's what it's like up here today is a whole variety of issues that are, you know, pretty much the same as they are all the way across the nation, because as we're in the midst of United Nations imposition of regulations and, you know, a whole variety of the international related subjects, it seems like, you know, across the board, it doesn't even matter what state you're in anymore. We're all facing real, real similar issues right now.
So. We are. I looked at some of the monkey business going on, and I don't know about you, but I just started off as a nice lady trying to mind my own business. And
that's right.
Tell us, where did it start for you? I mean, you are doing a lot now, but what lit your fire?
Well, in college, I studied three different subjects. I studied engineering, wildlife biology, and sociology. And for sociology, I chose to focus the topic of all my reports on the subject of either eugenics or the Holocaust. And you know, back in college, I basically laid a foundation for all of my study of, like, governments that have to do with, you know, fascist principles, communist principles, socialist kind of, you know, origins. And so I had that kind of background already. And I'd also been a lifelong horseman and horse trainer. And so after college, my husband and I bought a 40-acre farm in Stevens County, and I had been establishing my own horse breeding business and you know, really getting it going, and you know, it had been the dream of my whole life. And so that was in 2006, and then the National Animal Identification System started in Washington State in a volunteer matter, and so that was kind of what got my attention. Was as soon as I read everything about the National Animal Identification System, which involved, you know, radio frequency identification, microchipping of every animal and stuff, I went, oh my gosh, that is a fascist program. You know, I recognized right away that that was so un-American. It didn't belong in this country whatsoever, you know. And I also knew that if they were able to make that successful, that it would wipe out the horse industry, you know, as well as all the livestock industry. So
how can it wipe out the horse industry for you to just simply do a small thing like microchipping them?
Right. It doesn't sound like a big deal, does it? Until you realize that once you start researching into what that National Animal Identification System entailed, it meant that you're going to have to start investing in all of their requirements to meet, you know, all their standards and rules and regulations, which was going to be actually pretty expensive. And then not only that, but you're going to be forced to give up your privacy and your property rights, because then all the state officials and everybody that had anything to do with it were going to be in and out of your property at will, you know, constantly checking you for compliance and fining you heavily if, you know, they found you out of compliance. And back in the 50s, it was Oklahoma that had, they set out a law just to put a, I think it was like a $10 tax on each horse in the state. And, you know, you'd think $10, that's not so much. However, a lady that I knew that was a little girl at the time, she remembers that everybody sold all their horses because of it. And even for just $10 per animal per year, that was enough to make people get rid of their horses, because they're more or less a luxury item anyway. And she remembers so well because that was the year that her parents agreed to get her a horse, and they actually had to go outside the state to even find one because people had just literally gotten rid of them. And so then, you know, I knew for a fact that it was, you know, it was right about the time when the gas prices were already, you know, coming up and things were costing more. And so it was already at the point where the horse market was kind of being threatened anyway, you know, and so if you're going to add all the microchipping and all the expenses and loss of property rights and regulations and everything that would go along with that, I knew for a fact that, you know, people would be dumping horses just as fast as they could. And so, yeah, I mean, well, that's something I've got to get busy on right now. So.
Do you have any chickens?
I do.
I have never owned any chickens, but I have a daughter who liked chickens, and we learned a lot about chickens from that. They never came as far as wanting to microchip them, but the city in which I live tried to make a new rule. Thankfully, it didn't pass, but they wanted everybody to be able to get a permit if they wanted to have chickens. But let's talk about those horses. So they didn't microchip horses yet either. How did you stop that? And what is at the root of this?
I instantly started working on it in February of 2006, literally the day I heard about it. And I started working as a full-time researcher, a volunteer researcher for stopanimalid.org. And we organized multiple rallies and protests against it. And then through all the networking around the state and around the nation, a group here in our area, we all got together to write a bill to stop the, you know, the National Animal Identification System. We just call it NACE, to stop the NACE in Washington State. And so our first bill went into the House in 2007, and it failed miserably because they had already taken federal grants in the amount of like $312,000. And so the first year it failed. So we submitted another bill the next year to stop it, and it failed again. But by that time, it was, you know, getting to be such a well-known subject all around the whole nation that the nation literally rose up against it. And, you know, in these kind of efforts, you see that it typically takes about that long. It takes about 2.5 to 3.5 years for the whole nation to finally, you know, pull together, and everybody realizes, okay, this is the thing we've all got to focus on. And so it ended up being stopped by, you know, just the outrage from the whole nation. So,
well, we've had horrible bills pass in Missouri because Kansas City and St. Louis are large urban areas which know nothing about agricultural practices. And yes, in a more rural area, it's easy to get a population of voters who understand agriculture. When you look at animal rights groups and bring up anything, we had a bill pass in Missouri pertaining to how puppies are bred. And it turned into a really bad law. I'm sorry that the voters don't frequently think through what it is, but people imagined that everybody wants animals to be happy and healthy, of course. So if we pass more laws, it will make animals even happier and healthier, because obviously the people who breed them don't care about their welfare. Of course, that defies logic, because as a business, and I am a business owner myself, so if I take care of my inventory, I will have better inventory. For government to presume that we are too stupid to know how to take care of our possessions is flagrantly insulting. What are you doing as a full-time researcher for Stop Animal ID? Now that the battle's over, what is there left for you to do?
From being a researcher, I had posted 722 documents and articles, and myself and a couple of the other volunteer researchers from that website that all got together, we were literally uncovering a mystery at that point, because nobody knew anything about this. And what was interesting was by the time it was about the middle of 2007, about the summer of 2007, I started running across how NACE was actually a United Nations program. And up until that point, nobody had uncovered that information. And so I posted it on that website, and it was not long after that that I was posting this information, and I was going, oh my gosh, you know, I had no idea. This was an international mandate that has already happened in all the other, you know, countries, the EU, Australia, and everything. And so once I started posting that information that they had wanted to keep secret, the website mysteriously was just completely shut down. And it was down for about 2.5 months. And then all of a sudden it came back up, and all the information, all of our research had been completely wiped off. And so, you know, we were just, luckily we had backups and stuff, and, you know, we had copies of stuff that we had posted, but to the viewer, had they brought that website up, there would have been nothing for them to look at other than the blank pages. The pages were kept intact, but all the information was wiped off. And it turns out that somebody in Estonia, in Europe, had purchased the website, wiped all that information off, and put it back online. And it was a couple years later that I found out that Estonia happens to be kind of a haven for the elite. I don't know if it's because of tax breaks or you know, income hiding ability or whatever it is that attracts people to Estonia. But an awful lot of the elite have residences there, if not, you know, like full-time, you know, like seasonal places to live there. And so I thought that was kind of interesting, like the Clintons and the Gores also have, you know, a place there in Estonia of their own. And so I thought, oh, okay, that's really kind of highlights what might have happened there with that website. But after that website was shut down, and then, you know, the whole nation pretty much rose up against it, I kept researching into more of the United Nations information, because I was going, wow, you know, that program was really detrimental to everything that had to do with agriculture. And then I started looking at other different programs that seemed so un-American. I was like, I'll be darned, look at that. That one comes from the United Nations as well. And I just kept going and going and finding out that all the programs across the whole United States that seemed so un-American and had anything to do with suddenly regulating this or regulating that, they all linked back to the United Nations. And so I more or less just kind of switched my entire focus to the research of the United Nations and their form of governance. And boy, that was, it's been 8 years now, almost nine, that I've done all this research. And so that's what that book that I wrote is about. It's all about the United Nations and how their form of governance is it's called sustainable development. And what's interesting about sustainable development is that what you don't recognize with that particular name is that it's a form of governance. But the previous Prime Minister of the UK, Tony Blair, he said it best when he said, there is communism, there's capitalism, and now there's sustainable development. And I went, oh my gosh, that's the best definition I've ever heard of what sustainable development actually is. It's actually a form of governance. And so once he made that statement, I was like, gosh, that's true, because all of sustainable development is based on governing the nations of the world through environmental regulation. And they use, you know, different tenets of both fascism and communism in kind of tandem in a way to work at, you know, control globally. And so, you know, if somebody was to ask you, geez, what is sustainable development? It sounds like something that would even be attractive, you know, as something even positive. But when you find out, oh, no, it's actually, you know, a system that mixes communism and fascism in a way to regulate people out of their property rights, their individual rights, their, you know, their use of their land, you know, just about everything that Americans kind of hold dear. You have to start paying attention, because it's under these false positive sounding names that huge, huge problems are happening. And, you know, this is literally right under everybody's noses and nobody knows it.
I got elected in 1994 to municipal government, and there are organizations that reach out to the elected officials on the local level. There's an organization called National League of Cities. They put on conferences every year, and I would go to the conferences to learn. And that's where I was exposed to the concept of sustainable development. And it was always presented in a positive light, like this is what we have to do to make our communities better. Rah, rah, let's all get on board.
All right.
You start off with the local officials believing sustainable development is a good thing, and then they go on to become state legislators, which I did, and now we're friendly toward the concept because, after all, that only makes sense.
Right.
I have never heard of Estonia outside of watching horror movies, and I don't watch horror movies, but surely they mentioned it on the Addams Family or the Munsters. But that's all that most Americans know about Estonia.
Right.
And yet you did write that that's where the world's elite hang out, the Clintons, the Gores, and other European billionaires. Why is it that all of your information would have come from only one website? Couldn't it have been verified through a whole vast network of other people in agreement that that is the fact we all embrace together?
Yeah, in fact, there was there were several anti-NAACE websites at the time. Another really good one was nonace.org, and they're still online. But they never pulled in the information about the United Nations. And, you know, I mean, it could have just really been coincidence as far as the timing, but I tend to think not, just because ours was the only one talking about the United Nations being involved with this NAACE system that was essentially food control. And so the fact that the other websites all stayed up and running was kind of an indicator to me where, you know, I thought, well, you know, that is interesting. I mean, it could be entirely coincidental, but, you know, I was one of the people that also uncovered statements that they made where companies that were supporting all of the microchipping and that were going to, you know, stand to benefit financially from this system, they would have committee meetings and then post their minutes on their websites and stuff. And I ran across information where they actually said, and we don't want this information in the public until after the system is already established and running. And so I had posted that on that website as well. But that was kind of, you know, some of the first information that we ran across. So, I mean, it was really, it was clear that they wanted it all hidden, and they wanted the system up and running before everybody actually knew what was going on.
Well, let's talk about property rights for a minute. That is what has defined capitalism and allowed capitalism to happen.
Right.
Meanwhile, the communist system is based upon the fact that nobody owns property. I have read about the founding of our country, and when the original settlers came here, they offered to buy land from the Indians, and the Indians many times, the Native American Indians, said no, they believed the land belonged to everybody. And that was part of why they had trouble settling or even understanding the reservation system, because they believed all the land belongs to all the people. Now, here today, fast forward, my daughter's chickens had attracted some predators. And I remember calling the Department of Conservation and asking them if we could get rid of a hawk that is perched on top of our chicken coop and scaring all the cute little hens inside. And the Department of Conservation told me, no, I couldn't, even though the hawk was trespassing on my property. So they've got it. There was a day when government decided all the animals belong to the government, even if they're on my property trespassing.
Right.
It saddens me because it removed my ability to deal with my situation where I was suffering a terrible loss of property. I know, obviously, chickens have a lot of predators, but it removed my freedom to protect my chickens in the way I saw fit. Nevertheless, tell me what we're seeing now in the way property rights are being handled across the country, and what trends are you observing, and where do you think it's going to end?
Well, let me start with the United Nations Unsustainable List, because here they're saying that their form of governance is sustainable development. Well, it kind of makes you wonder what they would consider to be unsustainable, right? Well, it turns out that the UN put out something called the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, which was an 1,140-page document that basically described everything that they considered to be unsustainable. And so just reading through that unsustainable list from that report, I'll just go through a couple of them. Right off the bat, private property rights is considered unsustainable. That can be found on page 767 and 782 of that report. Population growth and human population density, that's addressed on page 771. Things like grazing of livestock, cows, sheep, goats, horses, that's unsustainable. That's on page 350. They even list really kind of ridiculous stuff like disturbance of the soil surface. That's unsustainable. That's on 351. Large hoofed animals, compaction of soil, reducing ground filtration. That's also on page 350. Fencing of pastures and paddocks on page 351, that's unsustainable. They even list agriculture as being unsustainable on page 728. Other things that they list, I won't go through and give the page number on each one, but I've got them here, are things like industrial activities, ski runs, paved and tarred roads, highways, railroads, technology improvements, farmlands, pastures, rangelands, modern hunting, harvesting of timber, logging activities, fossil fuels being used for driving various kinds of machines, dams, reservoirs, straightening rivers, power line construction, economic systems that fail to set a proper value on the environment, the big one to me, well, not that any of those are small, but one that really stands out to me as a Christian is on page 766 and 838, they list modern attitudes toward nature as found in the Judeo-Christian Islamic religions are all unsustainable.
Wow.
Meaning that in those religions, we all observe man over animals. And so that's what we are seeing, you know, in a nutshell, without going into the whole book, basically. That is pretty much an outline of what we're seeing happening to all of the things like, you know, property rights. It's to the United Nations and their system of sustainable development.
Who authored this document?
That was put out by the United Nations Environment Program, the UNEP. And you can actually get a copy of that whole document if you went to, you could order it online, or you could also, I actually have the mailing address if you want me to give that to you.
Can you download it off the internet?
Yeah, you can. Yep. It's actually $44.95 if you wanted to buy a copy. And you have to order it out of England.
Is it less expensive if you get an electronic copy?
I don't know. Possibly. I know that if you order it in actual paper form, then it's definitely $44.95.
I would hate to give my money to them, though. That would hurt.
I know. Especially for something you don't really like the content of anyway, right?
Yeah. Just go ahead and put links to each page that you're referencing to somewhere, and maybe we can all share. I am a conscientious objector toward the idea of giving them one dime of our money.
Right.
How does an organization like that get any credibility?
The United Nations or the UNEP?
This environmental faction. How do they not get laughed off the stage?
Well, you know, it's this has been going on for a very long time. In my book, I've got literally 10 pages of all the little incremental steps that have taken place, even since the late 1800s to get this action to where it is today. And when you look at all the steps that had to be made between governments and the League of Nations, which then turned into the United Nations in order to supposedly stop the World War, right? That was when America signed on to be a member of the United Nations. And ever since we signed on as members in 1945, little by little, they have, you know, in the smallest, tiniest little steps, it's called Fabian socialism or incrementalism, whichever term you choose to use. But this incrementalism happens in such small steps that they feel they've failed if anybody opposes it. And so when you've got, you know, what is it, 67 years now or more, if you consider when it actually started in the 1800s, when you've got that many years of absolutely unnoticeable micro steps being made in this direction, and, you know, in that time you're also able to appoint people that support your agenda. You know, I mean, the president gets elected and then he can choose a cabinet of everybody that supports his direction, right? And so, you know, when you look at how all these steps have been taken and made, it's unbelievable what they can accomplish through incrementalism.
It is unbelievable. So thank you for sharing that. And if people want more information on that, what is the website they would go to?
For which part?
Tell us about that horrid document if somebody wants to see
it
for themselves.
The Global Biodiversity Assessment Report. That website is, you could go to http://, so there's actually two forward slashes, earthwatch.unep.ch/biodiversity/assessment.php.
Okay, that's good. You never know when you might want to hear about biodiversity. To me, I would recommend you not read it before eating a meal.
Right, right.
Kind of makes you sick to think about it.
Right, exactly. And all of that is also written in my book as well. Through each reference, I provide the website or an exact article where that can be found. Literally throughout the whole book, it's just chock full of quotes and information with a direct link beneath it, so you can verify it all for yourself. And
okay,
so that's been really helpful.
Thank you. So now, turning a corner, you ran for both county commissioner and the Senate appointee position that came up a few years ago. Tell us how those races happened and what inspired you to run.
Well, I was inspired to run for county commissioner first. That happened in 2010, shortly after the Department of Ecology tried to enforce a buffer zone around our seasonal creek so that our horses couldn't drink out of the creek. And I told them, well, I'm not going to be doing any such thing until they have a court order, which was basically my attempt to hold them to due process of law, which is guaranteed under both state and U.S. Constitution. And when I said that I wouldn't do that without a court order, the DOE agent laughed at me. He goes, oh, that's not the way we work. And I said, how is that possible? Are you above the law? And he said, well, we'll just fine you into compliance. And I said, what do you mean you'll fine me? He says, well, we will fine you $10,000 per day that you don't comply. And if by the time the fines add up to equal the value of your property, we'll just have the sheriff come in and remove you from your whole property and assume your whole farm. And I said, oh my gosh, that's extortion, which is also illegal. Extortion and coercion are both illegal. Not to mention, you know, intimidation by an agency, you know. So that happened in 2009. And literally for that whole year, I don't think I got more than 20 minutes of sleep that whole year in any one instance. You just kind of feel like you're, you know, pulling your hair out because I rely on principles, you know,
right.
Where,
Renee,
you know.
My silence is because my jaw is dropping.
Yeah.
What would make a county commissioner want to prohibit your horses from drinking water out of their own creek?
Well, this was actually not from the county, but from the state. The Department of Ecology was the one that was saying that, no, you can't have your horses have access to the creek because they're saying, well, it'll pollute the water and it'll destroy riparian zones for fish habitats and stuff. And I studied wildlife biology in college, so I knew what he was talking about, and I was able to say that, you know, no, there are no riparian zones in our creek because it's not really a real creek. It's more of a drainage, and there aren't any fish in that particular creek. It's just seasonal.
Anyway, let me ask you, on whose property is that creek?
Mine.
So you were giving your horses a drink of water from your own creek on your own property. How would anybody know or care?
Well, what happens is if a neighbor makes any kind of complaint to the DOE, then the DOE has the go-ahead to go out and enforce action to be taken. Whether that is, you know, whether the complaint actually has any merit or not, is never even, they don't have to, they have taken the position they don't have to prove anything. All they need is somebody making a statement against you, and then they have full, you know, almost, they don't have right, but they think they have full right to go in and pursue you till you're literally destroyed.
So you have a law in Washington State that says no animals are allowed to drink out of creeks?
No, in fact, we don't.
Okay. Help
but
me.
But they sure would like you to think that.
Well, help me understand that then, because people in Missouri listening to this are going to think that's one of the most bizarre concepts they've ever thought of. Surely, is this just pertaining to horses, or is it your cows or livestock, steers?
This is all livestock animals. What they're trying to establish goes through one of the United Nations programs called the Wildlands Project, where they want to rewild huge regions of the United States, almost 50% of it. And the attempt to do that is by starting to chip away at people's property rights, their water rights, to establish these fraudulent buffer zones around all waterways, saying that, you know, if you want to keep your livestock and you want to keep your farm, you're going to have to fence off what was 35 feet beyond the highest watermark on your property. And what this does to all of the livestock industry, particularly the cattle industry, is it's going to wipe it out. Because there are, you know, people's entire whole land holding fall within these watermarks where, you know, it's sub-irrigated ground where the water probably doesn't even get above the surface of the ground. It just is perpetually green and grassy, right? So that's the best grazing land out there for cattlemen. And, boy, there's so many cattlemen in our local area that, you know, they could lose as much as, you know, their entire land holdings just to the buffer zones being set around these creeks and, you know, 35 feet beyond the highest watermark. And so, like one guy, I have his story in my book where he had 2,500 head of cattle on about 3,500 acres, and a river called the Colville River, it's not even a river, it's more of a stream, went about, oh, I think it was like a mile and a half through his property. And the DOE came to him and told him he would have to fence off 35 feet beyond the highest watermark. Otherwise, they were going to, you know, take his land and fine him. Same thing that happened with me. And he said, well, you know, before we do that, I would like to take water samples and find out if what you're saying is correct, because I want to know for a fact if I am polluting. And so luckily he did that, because over the course of a year, this guy took his sample right along with DOE, when and where they took it, and he stayed with his sample when they took it to the county. And when they got the results, he still stayed with it so he could see his sample the whole time, so there'd be no sleight of hand, no funny business, you know. And it turns out, after a year's time of testing the water, the results were so shocking when they came back, because it showed that the water was actually 300% cleaner when it left his property than when it went into his property. And that is with 2,500 head of cattle with full access to the water. And so you would think, right, if you just wanted to assume something without any proof, you would think, okay, yeah, there's a bunch of cows and there's water. Surely that water's polluted. Well, it wasn't. I mean, they even proved it. 300% cleaner when it left his property. And the reason for that is that above him, upstream, was a man-made wetland, you know, that they had taken actual farm ground and turned it back into a man-made wetland, and the Department of Ecology was all into that, and so what happens in that sub-irrigated land is that the grass grows so well, it gets to be like 8 feet tall out there, and then it blocks the sunlight from hitting the water of the stream. And then what happens is you get an anaerobic state that causes slime to grow and the bacteria content just shoots through the roof. So what happens when it's not being grazed is it actually pollutes the water, because it becomes anaerobic and disgusting and bacteria-ridden. And so downstream from this man-made wetland, all these cows are keeping it nice and grazed back. It looked like a park, you know. And just solid green everywhere. That's the thing with the sub-irrigated grass, is you can't ever get rid of it. It just, you know, it's there to stay, basically. And so it works out perfectly, you know. The cows eat it back. The sun can get to the water. The sun will kill the bacteria in the water. It cleans it up. Everybody's happy, right? Well, so this is kind of, you know, the DOE working against what actually works naturally very well. And so that's what they, that was a, you know, what they want all of the livestock owners to believe is that, oh, yes, in fact, you know, they are polluting the water when they aren't. So.
Well, that's horrible. Imagining they're trying to run you out of there. So we're back to the race. This evil man came to you and told you you're not allowed to let your horses drink out of your creek. And you said, I'm going to run then for county commissioner. How did that end up?
Well, I didn't win. I didn't win the election. The local president of the Cattlemen's Association, he won, which is fine. You know, as things go, he was a good candidate to actually have win.
Is that a partisan position?
Yeah, yeah. And I ran Republican, mm-hmm. and he was Republican also, and so. It turned out all right, but I didn't win the race. But what did happen was I was determined to put this out in the public eye, you know, bring as much attention to what was going on with the DOE as I could possibly get. And so every candidate's night I would lay this story out about how they were going to come in and assume my farm and have us removed and all this nonsense. And so that was pretty much my whole campaign, and also, you know, running on the platform of being against sustainable development. And so what happened was during one of the candidates' evenings, we had a state representative in the audience, and she came up to me afterward, and she said, Renee, can I come out to your guys' place and, you know, actually see your farm? And I said, oh, please do. And so... So she came out to our farm, and our farm is just 40 acres, but it's lush green, just, you know, looks like a park as well, because it seems like all this irrigated property that's so gorgeous and perfect for grazing, that's always the target, right? Because they don't want the livestock out there. You know, this is part of the Wildlands Project thing. And so, so what happened was she said, well, you know, this is a joke. I have to laugh because your place looks just like mine. I've got horses and a creek and you know, it's almost identical looking to mine. And she goes, so I'm going to go to bat for you on this. And so she took the regional director of the DOE and also the agent that we were dealing with. And she sat down with him for an hour, and she said, they went back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And finally, I mean, she couldn't get him to budge. And finally, at the very end, she said, okay, fine. You do that. But every single time you go to their farm, you're not going to go without me being there. And they said, what? And she goes, that's right. If you're going to bother these people, I'm going to be there every single time you go out there. And I'm going to watch everything you're doing. And they went, oh, my gosh. You know, and they relented. They said, oh, okay, fine. It's not that big of a priority anyway. And so they let it go, which to me is nothing short of a miracle from God, because once the DOE latches onto you, they don't let go. You know. And so I always say, well, I lost the race, but we ended up keeping our farm.
Well, you know, as a former state legislator, I find that whole thing offensive, because I've had people call me also and ask me for help. And even though I'm happy to help those who are being treated unfairly, there's a sense of indignation And it's really a sense of righteousness that what are we doing to people? So you mean to tell me if my constituents have my phone number and know enough to know how to reach out to me, then I can help them. It ought not be that way. Never.
I agree.
No.
I agree.
Justice should be accessible to everybody all the
time,
equally. And yes, I would go to bat for people too, but there's a part of me that felt like, why am I doing this? Why should I have to tell the bureaucrats how to conduct themselves?
Right.
If they're doing it to you, fortunately, you were smart enough to know how to fight back. But what about the people who don't know that there's any other way?
Right. And that was part of it, too, is I knew of about 10 other families in this area that had the same thing happen to them, and they just caved in. Mm-hmm. Because they were so intimidated by those kind of figures, you know, $10,000 per day fine. How does anybody ever defend themselves under those kind of conditions? You know, and so I was aware of what happens to the people that stand up to the DOE. And I just went, you know, I'm sorry, I have principles. I'm not going to cave in, and I'm not going to be bullied, and I'm not going to back down to a stupid agency.
So did those 10 other families get rid of their horses?
They just gave up their land. They put up their fence. They complied. And now they have no rights on that property.
So they own acreage, but it's of no value to them?
Right.
Because of
right.
the buffer. So why did you run for the Senate appointee position? What happened there?
Well, that was another... that was just an attempt of being able to, you know, try to fight sustainable development, you know, from a senator's position, because, you know, there's a few people in the state Senate and House that understand sustainable development as well as I do, but not that many. And I figured that, you know, maybe they could use my information, and maybe my information could bring everybody together on that issue. And so I tried for it, but didn't get that one either.
So why are all the good people ending last? If we have some of the, yeah, I learned this myself early in government. We thought we're electing the best and brightest, but we're not. I would get to the Capitol and look at some of the other legislators and ask myself, how did he get elected? And the answer is that we don't pick the best and brightest. Why is it that the old expression is good guys finish last? Why would the voters not want the person who can navigate through the morass?
Well, you know, It's kind of a staggering thing to behold, you know. I don't know. Is it the election process? Is it the voting process? You know, is it election fraud? You know, we don't know. There's every time we put up a good candidate, almost hands down, they never make it. And why is that? I don't know.
Let me give you another question then that might be up your alley. The Republican Party claims to be in favor of limited government and in favor of the taxpayer and in favor of personal responsibility. Those all resonate with me. That's my heart. That's in there. I love it when people are allowed to have personal responsibility and make the decision that best serves them. Why is it that we cannot count on the Republican Party to be the champion here? Why is the Republican Party not taking a lead in correcting the wrongs of the world and establishing property boundaries and making it? After all, it's in the platform. Why are they not there for us?
Well, you know, that is a very big part of the problem, actually. You know, being part of the Republican Party for me has been a mixed bag because in 2008, when Ron Paul first ran for president, he was out there saying, you know, we need to get out of the United Nations. And after all my research, I went, that's the guy we need to have in office. And so I backed him and went through the whole process of going to the Republican State Convention, got elected to go to that. And you know, it was very interesting because in our county, Ron Paul had the majority, and as was the case in most of the counties in Washington State. And so when we got to the state convention, all the Ron Paul people were going, we're going to win this thing with no problem. Well, we get to the state convention, and I literally, it was probably one of the most disheartening things I had ever witnessed. I mean, I was there, I saw everything that happened, and the McCain machine just ran roughshod over all the Ron Paul representatives, you know, all the people that were there for Ron Paul. And they did it in a manner that was shameful. You know, and the way that the whole McCain thing worked was that it seemed to us that the Republican Party at the national level chose their candidate and then tried to enforce it from the top down, because the same tactics were used across the whole United States. And we watched it happen from state to state to state, which was, you know, by the time it came to Washington, we went, okay, well, we're, you know, at least prepared for the mass exodus that they did in Utah, you know, I mean, in Nevada. And we went, well, if they pull that, we'll be on to them, you know. And sure enough, they did. They tried to pull that. And what happens is they tell all the McCain people to just get up and walk out so that all the voting has to stop. And, you know, we went, that's not right. You know, this is crazy because we've got majority. And so when they did that in Washington, they all got up and walked off. And we had majority, so we were able to keep going. And they went, oh my gosh, this can't be. And so you could literally see the guy at the head of the party grab his cell phone once we were able to keep going. He grabbed his cell phone, turned around, and was making, like, you could tell, like, frantic statements, you know. And then everybody started filtering back in. And this was like watching a mass exodus. There's like 600 people that literally all at the same time got up and walked out, you know. And so then, you know, it was one thing after another. And the people that wanted to go on to cast their vote for Ron Paul at the national level, well, lo and behold, most of our paperwork disappeared at the state level somehow. And you had to submit this paperwork in order to be eligible for that position so that, you know, they could vote. Well, we didn't, like, that totally blindsided everybody from our area. They said, well, unless you have a receipt or proof showing that, you know, you sent this paperwork or whatever, then you're not eligible to go to the national convention to vote for Ron Paul. And that wiped out most of us right there. We went, what? You know, what do you mean? Our names should be on that list. We all sent in our paperwork just like you're supposed to. And then we get there and they go, oh, well, we can't find it.
So what you're saying is that there was so much monkey business going on that it made it impossible to work within the system. So how
right.
are we going to change things? And what's next for Renee Holiday?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, I always tell people that one person can accomplish a lot. Don't ever let anybody tell you that, oh, I'm just one person and I can't make a difference, because nothing could be further from the truth. I mean, like right now, with the property rights group, what we're doing is we're essentially, we have put the Department of Ecology on notice publicly stating that, you know, you will be violating 14 state and U.S. constitutional, you know, articles and amendments if you try to enforce these buffer zones around waterways so that people have to fence off their land so their livestock can't graze, you know, or reach the water. And so, you know, that's kind of what I'm working on right now with the group.
You want to run for something?
You know, I don't know. I'm not really sure. It's kind of one of those things where after you've seen what your own Republican Party has done and how, you know, since then, you know, since they knew that I was a Ron Paul supporter, that meant I was labeled the enemy. Even though I was Republican, I wasn't running as Democrat even, you know. I was running as Republican, but now I am the enemy. And our local Republican group has us still, all of us that they knew were Ron Paul supporters, were all on the outs with the whole Republican Party because of that. And they won't let it go. And, you know, so we're just kind of going, you know, how are you ever going to get elected if you can't even get your own party's support, you know? And all because you chose a different Republican candidate for president than they did. So it's sad and it's kind of shameful, you know, that, you know, they got to be that way. But, you know, what else can you do? And really is, I never would encourage anybody to give up or quit trying. I would always say you always keep trying and you always keep working in a singular direction, you know, you keep a focus. So,
are you familiar with the Constitution Party?
I am.
And what are your thoughts on that?
Well, after having seen, like you were saying, all the monkey business and all of the bias that started from the top and forced its way down, you know, instead of the other way where the American people are the ones that have the choice and they choose their person, you know, after seeing everything that they did and everything that they're still doing here, even locally, I'm so put off by their lack of ethics and morality that I'm looking at the Constitution Party going, you know, if they never win, at least they stood for the principles.
At least they didn't lie. And I mean, the problem is the Democrats don't really hold to much of a platform. They don't need to. They generally like government to grow bigger and more intrusive and more expensive. And they believe government has the answer to all our problems. So people can approach the Democrats any way they want, but they hardly can be called hypocrites because they didn't promise anything. The problem with the Republican Party is the false advertising.
Yeah. Right. When they're supposed to be the representative for property rights and they're not doing anything to stop it at the state or the local level, you know, that's really, you're right. They're misrepresenting, you know.
I'd rather keep my honor intact than to lie to the people.
And that's so, right.
Yeah. Well, thank you for giving us some of your time out of your busy day. Can you tell us what is your website where you might have more information posted if people want to research this further?
You bet. They can look at our Citizens Alliance for Property Rights website, and that is www.C as in cat, A, P as in Paul, r.us/STEV as in Victor, E, N as in Nancy, S/. So it reads www.caper.us/Stevens/.
I like Stevens. I already have a special spot in my heart for Stevens County. Thank you for being with us today, Renee. You've been a pleasure and a delight. Give us one last word you want us to remember.
One person can change their whole state. Don't think you can't. Just keep on, and like I said, keep your singular focus. And do everything you can.
We will, Renee. Thanks for being our guest today. God bless.
God bless you, too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This has been another edition of Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, and I thank you for joining us. We're taking America back one family at a time. I sincerely hope you heard something that left you feeling inspired, motivated, and ready to engage our culture. If you enjoyed our show, you can find more at cynthiadavis.net. You can also find me on Facebook at Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Have a great week and make sure you come back next time for another edition of Homefront.